Listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Boy, everybody's running around here like a chicken with their head cut off. You'd think we'd never done this before, folks. The girls are not here to do the pledge, and Doyle is looking for a key piece of equipment that we need to take calls later. Isn't it incredible? And here it is. Okay. Thank you, Doyle.
Alrighty.
Okay. Well, just to give you a little lowdown on what's going on, folks, and let you know how bad this economic crisis really is. I'm going to give you the statistics, hot off the presses, so to speak. Now, I took these off the stock exchange before it closed, so they could be up or down a little bit, but. Believe me, folks, this is right on the money. Even if they close a little higher or lower than what we have here today, the percentages are still going to work out right on the money. All around the world, the economy of all the different countries, I don't care which countries they are in deep trouble. Many exchanges have crashed. Many economies are no longer existent, like in Russia. In Japan, the banks are no longer solvent. The government is trying to bail them out. And in this country, a huge, tremendous, many, many billions of dollar mutual fund went down the tubes and was bailed out with a huge several billion dollar loan. But here's the figures. So when you hear these figures, you go figure. And if you can't figure enough to get ready, heaven help you, because I don't know how to do it if you don't see the need for it. And I think you had better really reassess your position and your thoughts and where you stand on all of this, if you have not prepared for a tremendous, tremendous, hard few years ahead. The American Exchange, that's the American Exchange, in July was 755. Today was 560 when I took it off the exchange. It lost 195 points, which represents 26% of its entire value just since July. 26% of the value of the American Exchange just since July, a little over 2 months, has gone up in smoke. The NASDAQ over-the-counter, exchange, in July was 2,030 points. Today it was 1,343 points, lost 687 points, representing 34% of its value disappeared in just a little over 2 months. The Standard & Poor's 100 in July was 585. Today it's 460, lost 125 points, representing 22% of its total value. The Standard & Poor's 500 in July was 1,195 points. Today was 926, lost 269 points, representing 23% of its total value. The New York Stock Exchange. This is the New York Stock Exchange. In July was 602 points. today was 464 points, lost 138 points, representing a loss of 23% of its total value. The Dow Jones Industrial Average in July was 9,377. 9,377. Today was 7,491 when I pulled these figures off the exchange. Lost a total of 1,886 points, representing 21% of its total value. That's a lot of money, ladies and gentlemen, that has disappeared from the economy. Gone. Up in smoke. And you wonder why? I'm telling you what I'm telling. It's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse, folks. So you had better hunker down. You had better prepare for some hard, and I do mean some hard times. In the meantime, I will attempt to open your minds and reveal to you some of the esoteric meaning behind what you read as literal meaning in the mysteries. And you will be amazed if you listen very carefully. You might learn something. I hope that you do. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to do one of the things that I love to do most. That's to part the veil and peek behind the shroud of mystery that hides the secret religion of the ancient brotherhood. That which people like Malleus Maleficarum believe in. Albert Pike, Alfred Boyd Kuhn, Manly T. Hall, George Bush, William Jefferson Clinton. And you will begin, I guarantee you, if you listen carefully, and if you can think, you will begin to see the light. You see, they believe that the Western world has too long and fatuously labored under the delusion that a pious and devout disposition fulfills the whole requirement of true religion. Not so, they say. Ancient sagacity knew that piety without intelligence or religion without philosophy was insufficient and even dangerous. It knew that general good intent was not safe from aberrancy, folly, and fanaticism unless it was directed by the highest powers and resources of the mind. And remember always that this is what they believe does not make it true. And the mind itself, they say, had to be fortified with specific knowledge of the nature of the cosmos and of man and the relation between the two. Following the dictum of the sage Hermes Trismegistus that the vice of a soul is ignorance, the virtue of a soul is knowledge, the scriptures of old inculcated the precept that with all man's getting, he must first get wisdom and understanding. These were related to his well-being as health to his navel and marrow to his bones, and would alone give him a crown of eternal life. These things were pronounced more precious than all the things that he could desire. The Council of Illuminati therefore laid down their systems of cosmology and anthropology, which have become, by immemorial tradition, the Bibles of humanity, universally reverenced, and in them were given the ordinances of life, the constitution of the cosmos, the laws governing both nature and mind. They still constitute the Magna Carta of all human action guided by intelligence, for they were the first institutes embodying the Principia and Fundamenta of all moral behavior, the only true chart and compass to guide human effort in a line of harmony with an overshadowing divine plan of evolution for the cosmos. The corruption and final loss of the basic meaning of these scriptures has been, in the whole of time, they believe, the greatest tragedy in human history. Like Shakespeare's Tide, which taken at the flood leads on to fortune, but omitted, casts all the rest of life in shoals and quicksands, the wreckage of the esoteric gnosis in the centuries following Plato's day, culminating in the debacle of all philosophical religion about the third century of Christianity's development and ushering in 16 centuries of the Dark Ages, has thrown all religion out of basic relation to true understanding and caused it to breed an endless train of evils, fanaticisms, bigotries, idiosyncrasies, superstitions, wars, and persecutions that more than anything else blacken the record of man's historic struggle toward the light. And if you understand that portion of their philosophy, then you know why they hate Orthodox Jews, fundamentalist Christians, and members of the Nation of Islam. They believe that the most frightful of all historical barbarities owes its incidence directly to the decay of ancient philosophical knowledge and the loss of vision and virtue that would have attended its perpetuation. So what then must be the importance of all of this information that they say restores to the scriptures of ancient wisdom the lost light of their true original meaning? In a very real to them, and direct way, the salvation of culture and a free spirit in the world is contingent upon this restoration of the ancient intelligence to modernity. And thus you see the springing up of the old pagan religions in the New Age movement and in other organizations and movements throughout the world. You see, they believe that for man at this age, he's had new and mighty powers of nature suddenly placed in his hands, but yet he lacks the spiritual poise and sagacity to use them without calamity, the message in the movie 2001. Most strangely, the control of the lower physical, natural, or brute forces by the mind, or reason, was the one central situation primarily and fundamentally dealt with in the sage tomes of antiquity. And to effect that control in a perfect balance and harmony, and to train the reasoning intellect in the divine art of it, was the aim and end of the arcane philosophy, which I have revealed to you as the mysteries. Ideology in the Western world has endlessly vacillated back and forth between the cult of the inner spirit and engrossment in objective materialism, while ancient philosophy taught that the true path of evolutionary growth, if you believe in such a thing, was to be trodden by an effort that united the forces of the spirit with those of the world, the lower disciplined by the higher. The whole gist of the esoteric, or hidden, or secret doctrine, was the study and mystery of the powers engaged in working out the evolutionary advance so that the aspirant, or initiate, might be able to align his cultural effort in consonance with the requirements of the problem and the end to be achieved. Without this guiding data and this evolutionary perspective, modern man, they believe, is totally at a loss how to focus his endeavor and is unable to point his direction in line with anything more fixed and basic than his next immediate objective of apparent desirability. In other words, they aspire to social engineering. He has neither a knowledge of his origin, a chart of his path, an inventory of his capacities, or a vision of his goal. Hence he travels the long road, still a benighted wanderer without compass. He can but recoil from one mistaken plunge after another, learning sporadic lessons from pain and misfortune, the way that most people learn, the way of the sheeple. The ancient torch that was lighted for his guidance, he has let burn out. You see, this lamp was the body of ancient philosophy. In this critical epoch in the life of the world, this philosophy proclaims afresh the message of what they believe to be the lost truth, the lost word, the lost phallus of Osiris, the lost light, if you will. They believe that there were three ancient and long discredited sciences that have had a surprising renaissance in popular fancy and scientific interest. One that I have struggled to teach you for many years is symbolism. The other two are alchemy and astrology, which are absolutely worthless and useless to any and all of you without a knowledge and a deep, abiding knowledge of the first, symbolism. You see, you read the alchemical works as if they were literal truths, but they are esoteric tomes bearing a hidden message, and astrology is the great metaphor of the hidden religion of the mysteries. And they never used it to foretell the future. That was for the profane, the uninitiated, the ignorant, who believed that a great happening in the sky would foretell some great happening on earth. Astrology has particularly come into a general vogue, but ladies and gentlemen, on a basis which still inclines conservative positivism in science and scholarship to regard it as allied closely with popular superstition. In its predictive or fortune-telling aspect, it is generally looked at askance because that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It is, in fact, a hoax, a con job. The ages-old machinations of what we used to call mediums today are more likely called psychics or channelers, but nevertheless, hoaxes they are, and con men and con women who happily take your money. Listen to you talk a little bit, and then from that, read your present and your future. Anyone who understands human nature can do those things. But you see, there is another side on which it has pertinence and value that has not been recognized in the modern revival, and on which perhaps the mysteries believe is its most legitimate claim to consideration, and this is its function as symbolic theology, as I've been telling you for years. unquestionably cosmic operation, cosmic significance, lie behind the 12 constellations of the zodiac and the 36 or more other stellar configurations. The planisphere, or chart of the heavens, was doubtless the first of all Bibles, pictorially edited, since man could not write and had no printing presses, and since over a period of time, oral history tended to be changed or forgotten. They planted their beliefs in the great constellations of the heavens, to be passed on forever and ever and ever. Not quite simply and directly, but intrinsically, all Bibles are amplifications and elaborations of the original volume of ideography, first written on the open face of the sky, charted in the zodiac and heavenly maps, and later transferred to earth and written in scrolls and parchments. Man was instructed to fashion his new body of spiritual glory after the pattern of things in the heavens. The heavenly, or zodiacal man, and a graph of the structure and history of this celestial personage was sketched by the enlightened sages in the configurated star clusters. You see, zodiac comes from the Greek word zodion, a small living image, signifying that it is a graph of the microcosmic life of man, which is cast in the form of the macrocosmic life of the universe, or of God. In the New Age movement, it is known as above, so below. You've all heard it. Man's own small body is a replica of this body of God, made in its image and likeness, according to the beliefs of the esotericism of the secret religion. The vast frame of cosmic man was outlined in the scroll of the heavens, the solar systems and galaxies being living cell clusters in his immense organism, and thus pantheism was born, as they believed that everything was linked and had an effect upon everything else. Thus squishing an ant as one walked down the road could, they believed, have some effect upon some far distant future. A deal of this Adam-bred symbology elucidating theological doctrinism is set forth in the body of the works of people like Manly P. Hall, Alfred Boyd Kuhn, Albert Pike, and many others. But there is a group of its data that strikes so deeply into the heart of general theology that it is given at the outset for the sake of its overwhelming impressiveness to most, if not all, initiates of the Brotherhood. You see, they believe that it proves to be so conclusive an evidence that biblical theology rests more solidly than has ever been believed on zodiacal backgrounds that its presentation must be admittedly a matter of great moment. It traces the unsuspected significance of two of the 12 signs, Virgo and Pisces, in the very heart of the New Testament narrative. So let the listener picture before him the ordinary zodiac with the house of Virgo at the western equinox point and that of Pisces directly opposite on the eastern side. The simple fact that they stand 6 months apart will presently be seen to assume great importance in gospel determination if you understand and believe the esoteric message that those of the Brotherhood believe is encoded and written below the literal interpretation of the Bible. This exposition must begin with a puzzling and hitherto unexplained item of ancient religious myth that the Christs, that's plural, Christs, the sun gods, the messiahs, all were depicted as having two mothers. Now how, one asks, could there possibly be rational significance in this? It has been put aside as just some more of the mythical rubbish and nonsense of early paganism. but the profundity of pagan intelligence, hiding sublime cosmic truth or a hidden story under glyph and symbol, has not been dreamed of by most of you. And I'm telling you, you had better not only dream of it, but seek it out and study it. The depiction should not have created incredulity, seeing that the gospel Jesus himself, the dramatic figure of the divine principle in man, announced it categorically in declaring to Nicodemus that, quote, ye must be born again, end quote. Nicodemus asked if this means that we must enter a second time into our mother's body and experience a second birth in the natural manner. But Jesus replies that we, quote, must be born of water and the Spirit, end quote. Attention must be directed to the fact that the Latin word spiritus, translated spirit in many passages of the Bible, means as well air or breath. One of the great keys to Bible meaning is the series of the four elements of ancient mythicism, which are earth, water, air, and fire. And if you've read anything ever of the alchemists, you are acquainted with those four elements. The body of the physical or natural man was conceived as being composed of the two lower, earth and water, while air and fire, representing mind and spirit, commingled to make the higher or spiritual man, was never meant to be taken literally. Jesus' statement to Nicodemus then could have been rendered born of water and air. And John the Baptist uses three of the four elements when he states that he, the forerunner of the Christos, and therefore a type of the lower natural man, indeed baptizes us with water, omitting earth, but that there cometh after him one higher than himself, who shall baptize us with the Holy Spiritus, air, and with fire. Jesus thus affirms that we have two births, necessitating two mothers, and John the Baptist adds that we must have two baptisms. Listening to the Hour of the Time, I'm William Cooper, and tonight, you're in school. ladies and gentlemen, as you listen to tonight's lesson in your in your education of what lies behind the veil of the mysteries, Freemasonry, the Ancient Order, the Rosicrucii, the Lodges of the Knights Templar, the Knights of Malta, etc. Don't get what I am giving you as something that you must believe or that I believe, for that is not the case. And whether it is or is not is of no matter whatsoever. You cannot fight a battle unless you know your enemy. And you cannot know your enemy unless you understand your enemy, his life, his morals or lack of morals, his religion or lack of religion, his philosophy, his tactics, what he reads, where he obtains his spiritual sustenance, if he has such a thing. And when these people are in power, ladies and gentlemen, it makes absolutely no difference what you believe in the great scheme of things when you are dealing with these people. You must understand what they believe, for if they have the power, what they believe is what will affect you. It is what they believe that they will bring into law. It is what they believe that they will use to enslave you or to set you free. It depends upon who it is and what they believe. And I can guarantee you, while this nation may have begun with a majority of its adherents and citizens worshiping the God of the Christian Bible, it is not that way today. The men who hold the power in the halls of government at all levels, city, county, state, and federal, believe in the philosophy that I am giving you now. And so you had better take heed and pay attention. And at this point, we have to go into a discussion of God. And before I can do that, lest you misunderstand and take literally what Malleus Maleficarum was telling you the other night on this broadcast, that he was a Christian and that he believes in God, making or trying to make you believe that it is the God of the Christian Bible, he is a liar. He lies by omission and by twisting. And he lies by mingling or commingling terms, which you, the sheeple, take to mean that he believes what you believe. And that is not true. So I will attempt now to acquaint you with the heart and soul of one of the core beliefs, one of the root beliefs of the mysteries. They believe in two fires, the supernal and the infernal. They believe that it is impossible, absolutely impossible, to present the one in entire disseverance from the other. In the background for the clarification of this aspect of the interpretation can be readily set up, and I will cover all of that information in subsequent broadcasts. But the whole doctrine of hellfire has fallen so infinitely remote from even the outskirts of the true understanding of what they believe that I've got to set it before you so that you can grapple with it in good earnest now. They believe that the deplorable state of modern exegesis in this segment of theology impels one to a vehement expression of disgust at the harrowing grotesquerie of rendering which a comparison of ancient esoteric meaning with current superstition so readily excites. You see, but this situation has to be evident as a general matter and should need but little reinforcement beyond the revelation of gaping chasms of difference between the old and the present readings. When you read these things, you read them literally. Yet this theology of a hell of fiery torment has suffered such an unconscionable distortion from its primary bearing and has afflicted the mind of mankind with so outrageous a delusion that every consideration points to the necessity of a vigorous handling in the interests of sanity and social benefit. You see, before Dante wrote his Inferno, nobody ever heard of a devil with a pointed tail and horns and withering souls burning forever in the fires of hell being poked by pitchforks and in various manners and ways caused to suffer for all eternity. The perversion of original teaching regarding the lower fire has cast over the collective mind of the Western world the foulest hypnotic obsession which it has ever suffered. The strangling tentacles of this theological devilfish have spread over the whole of Christendom and have compressed the spiritual genius of that segment of mankind into the coldest and most inhumane bigotry known to history. These are their own words, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll tell you where some of it comes from later. You see, they hate you if you are a Christian, if you are an Orthodox Jew, if you belong to the nation of Islam, if you are a Muslim. They hate you, especially if you are a Catholic. They hate you. They believe that for ages the doctrine in its misconceived form has deprived the Christianized world of its reason and opened doors to the entry of every superstition. They believe it has snuffed out the native spark of human brotherhood and brought between man and man the lurid glare of its own devilish mischief. For the fiercest fires of persecution and fiendish cruelty ever lighted upon earth flared out under the impulsion of the fantastic theological teaching that the acts of one's brother may be the impious machination of the devil. They look at it as too gruesome and ghoulish a chapter of horrors to even linger upon. Yet the same philosophical benightedness out of which this atrocious monster of diabolism and demonism has emerged has never to this day been dispelled by the light of wisdom. A more sensitive humanity of the present, sickened by the ghastly spectacle of past tortures and holocausts, inspired by fiendish zeal, has tried to drop the subject as far as possible out of sight and has imposed a taboo upon its exploitation in religious quarters. This refers directly to the Inquisition of the Catholic Church during what is known as the Dark Ages. And they believe that the darkness has not yet been dissipated, and the monster is still capable, on provocation, of glaring fiercely out of the murks. And ladies and gentlemen, I must tell you that that monster is real. It is there. I have seen it, and some of you have heard it in the calls made to this broadcast and others. Those who are so religiously zealot that they would burn at the stake again anyone who dared to disagree with their own personal bigotry, their dogma, their religion, their race, even. So there are some things about the mysteries that I do agree with, and that is one. Further, they believe the light that would have enabled the Christian world to describe a beast in his true outlines and character has never been rekindled since it was extinguished about the 3rd century. And those of you who have studied religion know what happened in the 3rd century. That's when they met at the Council of Nicaea, condemned all the books that disagreed with the dogma of the emperor or pope, and chose the books that would make up what is now known as the Christian Bible in the Catholic Church. Now, they believe that had that light been available, it would have revealed that the fiery dragon of the pit, and listen to this carefully, folks, because this is one of the key elements of the beliefs hidden behind the veil of the mysteries. It is what Malleus Maleficarum alluded to when he called in on this broadcast that Monday night, when he said that he believed in God and that he was a Christian. This is what he believes. This is the truth of it. You see, but he was speaking in a metaphor even then. He believes that had that light been available, it would have revealed that the fiery dragon of the pit was none other than God himself. His face begrimed with smoke, his features distorted by the grimaces of the beast through whose eyes he looked out upon this strange world, and his countenance luridly alight with the smudgy flare of the earthy furnace. Many of you have read Paradise Lost. Well, Milton's lakes of seething fire in Paradise Lost are a travesty of truth, unless, as the mysteries believe, it is taken purely as the symbology they are. You see, they believe, Malleus Maleficarum believes, Albert Pike believes, Manly P. Hall believes, Alfred Boyd Kuhn believes, George Bush believes, all of these people believe, William Jefferson Clinton believes, Newt Gingrich believes, Bob Dole believes. They believe Satan is the God himself on earth. They believe Satan is God on earth. They believe that it's incontestable. They believe that it is proven by the very name. The descending God was the light bringer, Lucifer, the bright and morning star, which is precisely the character assumed by the Jesus of the biblical revelation. Therefore, they believe Jesus was Satan himself, God on earth. They believe the Christian devil, the hated serpent of evil, Satan, is Lucifer, the God of light on earth, the bright and morning star, Jesus, Prometheus, the benefactor of mankind, God himself. That's what they believe. That's what they believe, ladies and gentlemen, and I could not go on where they speak of God without revealing to you exactly what it is that these people mean when they say God.